This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Good morning, Roger. Good morning, world, as we come to you this morning with our weekly get-together on the Saturday morning show. And a lot going on this weekend. As a matter of fact, it looks like the Farm Bill is going to get finished before the end of the year. And it also looks like we're going to get the new NAFTA number 2, which I call it, but it's really the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. It looks like we'll get that signed before the end of the year. And then, of course, the happenings in South America at Buenos Aires. All market activity has focused on that all week, whether you're in the corn, wheat, or soybean market as a trader, or whether you're on Wall Street as a trader. Attention has certainly been focused on that meeting coming up tonight in Argentina. So a lot to talk about this morning, including some memories of George H.W. Bush, who passed away this weekend, age 94. I have some great memories of the president, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But we're going to begin by chatting with the CEO of the National Pork Producers, because that's another commodity that's been affected by some of the trade tariff retaliatory activity that we've seen now since summertime. And so we'll be talking to the CEO of the National Pork Producers when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. Is Chief Executive Officer of the National Pork Board. And of course, pork producers have been in the news with all of the activity and trade internationally. But before we get to that, let's talk about the industry here in the United States from a pork producer standpoint. Growing?
Absolutely, Orion. The industry has been growing very nicely over a number of years, and I said it's always better to be part of a growing industry than one that's in decline. Now, a growing industry does have growing pains. We have a number of new packing plants that are online, and another one looks slated to come online here next spring in Iowa. A number of new producers entering the market, as well as new facilities being built. So those are all very good things, sign of a growing industry. I think the risk is really then where do you sell it?
And, of course, there's been the risk for those North Carolina producers and other states hit by the hurricanes.
Absolutely. We spent a lot of time working with our friends and colleagues in the pork industry in North Carolina, and whether you were a row crop farmer or pig producer or poultry producer, recovering from that has occupied a lot of time and attention of the industry.
So let's talk about the challenges internationally from a trade standpoint, because we're concerned about the pork flu or the pork disease that's spreading across the country. How are your producers dealing with that?
Yeah, so we export about 27% of U.S. pork production now, so exports have been very important to make that happen. And as we look at where those markets are, China being one of them, there was some news that came out earlier this summer of African swine fever in China. And the important thing, the good news is, number one, people can't catch it, so that's good. It's just a disease of pigs. And number two, pork is still safe to eat, so that's not a problem. But the real problem, Orion, is the fact that there is no treatment, vaccine, or cure for this. And so the pigs can get very ill and then subsequently die.
And I hear the virus can live in frozen pork products for years.
Yeah, it's a risk of it's a long-term, very durable virus. And currently there's no vaccine on the near-term horizon to help our producers. So biosecurity becomes very important, protecting our ports, our borders, as well as at the farm.
So maybe you can reaffirm my emphasis to travelers internationally from the U.S. when you get that card from the flight attendant on the airplane coming back in, answer the questions honestly, because this can really spread quickly.
Well, you are so spot on, and thank you for bringing that up. The world that we live in now, there's a lot of travel, and that's a blessing. But we also have to be honest when we're coming in, if we've been on a farm, if we've been out in an agricultural land, if we've been around pigs, because there are very simple things we can do to just kind of disinfect your shoes, for example, to make sure that we don't end up making our pigs sick here in the United States.
Yeah. So what do you see as the future for pork producers family-wise?
So, the industry has been growing nicely, and we see a real lot of opportunities for crop producers that maybe years ago had hogs or cattle, bringing the swine back onto the farm and then having the nutrients to go out into the soil. You get that virtuous cycle back going again. As my dad always said, if you want to have a healthy hometown, you got to have people doing chores. And so in rural America, whether you have hogs or cattle or poultry, along with your row crop farming, you have a much more vibrant local economy.
And I remember my first trip to China back in the 70s, and they, of course, are the biggest pork producer in the world, but at that time, they were using the pig for fertilizer, not so much for meat, because the minute the pig dropped something, you got it on the field.
Yes.
And it was a valuable product for those farmers in China.
And we're seeing that a lot of awareness again in the United States. The Pork Checkoff is doing some real good work with some pork producers around the country to understand how nutrients from the hogs back on the farmland can really help with soil health. And we're seeing increases in organic matter, and that's a good thing.
It is a good thing, and you keep on doing what you're doing with the National Pork Board, because we need that promotion for people who really don't understand how it's produced and how to prepare it for meals. So thank you very much. Visit with Bill Even, Chief Executive Officer of the National Pork Board. We're coming up on 17 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, on the Saturday Morning Show. And like many Americans, I'm sure I was saddened by the news of the death of President George H.W. Bush. As I said earlier in my conversation with Roger and Matt, the opportunity to interview presidents has come my way several times during my career, and President George H.W. Bush is the only president who invited me to come into the White House with my camera crew and set up the interview and conduct the interview inside the White House. I also remember sitting with him on stage when he appeared at one of the Farm Progress shows quite a few years ago. I think it was in Iowa because it was a hot day, and I was invited to sit on the stage and make some remarks about the president coming to a farm show, and I was pleased to do that. And then, of course, on my 75th birthday, I received a photo and a note, an autograph photo and a note from President George H.W. telling me that 75 was great. And as usual, he was right. One of the fascinating stories, and I can't remember the title of the book that was written about George H.W., because we came very close to not having any Bush in the White House, because in World War II, he was a Navy pilot in the Pacific, and his plane was shot down near an island occupied by Japanese armed forces. And when they saw the plane come down near the island, they immediately got into a boat and went out to capture the pilot. But before they got there, a U.S. submarine surfaced a short distance away from where the plane went down and pulled George H.W. off the downed airplane into the submarine and sailed away. Had that not happened, there probably would not have been one Bush, much less two, in the White House. So, some memories, and saddened by the death of the president at age 94. He did live a long, full life. We're at 19 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. Something else that hit my sad button this week. The author, or I should say the editor of the Agridairy Business Letter, John Onken, who I have known since he was a county agent in Wisconsin, then moved on to the American Dairy Association of Wisconsin, and I constantly run into John at dairy events around the Midwest, and very often quote from his every other week newsletter, the Agri-Dairy Business Letter, because he covered the dairy industry probably better than anybody else I know in the industry, at least. But this week, his edition of the Agri-Dairy Business Letter, let me quote from page 2 of that letter. It is with mixed feelings that I write this issue, the 884th issue of Agri-Dairy Business Letter, knowing it will be the last one of the series that began with the issue of November 24th, 1984. That figures out to almost 2.5 years of my life thinking, typing, and mailing this newsletter. I've never had a single regret about the time invested because of the great comments from readers over the many years. So we'll be talking to John. As a matter of fact, before the holidays, I'll have him join me here on the Saturday morning show to sort of reminisce on some of the big dairy stories and activities that he has covered during this life of 884 issues of the Agri-Dairy Business Letter. But like me, John is not quite as mobile as he used to be, and that becomes an issue if you're going to events like the World Dairy Expo, Wisconsin Farm Technology Days, and the many other activities that we covered together. And he is a bicycle fan. As a matter of fact, he has ridden a bicycle 2,000 miles a year for a couple of decades. And the doctors told me that my great physical condition had a lot to do with making a serious situation not quite so serious. And thanks for your phone calls and cards, and I appreciate it. And he also talked about the fact that he takes an annual bicycle trip with a group of friends in various parts of the Midwest. And he said when he wrote his first column on that bicycle trip, he got more response to that than he did to any other Agri-Dairy Business Letter over the years. So, John Onken, we'll keep counting on you to cover the dairy industry and to reporting on the dairy industry, and we'll get John with us on the air in the next few weeks. Speaking of getting people on the air that we always enjoy visiting with, Tim Andreessen, who handles agricultural products at the CME Group, gives us the opportunity to chat and catch up with him at least a couple times a year, the Illinois State Fair and also the Farm Broadcasters Convention in Kansas City, Missouri. And that's where I sat down with him this year, not too many weeks ago, second week of November, when Farm Broadcasters hold their annual convention in Kansas City. And sitting down to talk to Tim, I talked about the turmoil we've had in the marketplace over the past year with trade tariffs and retaliations and trade wars and all that sort of thing. And I asked him what kind of an impact that has had on the futures and options market.
As you would imagine, as markets get more risky, people are more interested in risk management. So this has been a year where, you know, we started the year off with expectations it would be pretty benign. And then we started having production problems in Australia. We had production problems in Argentina. As you point out, we had geopolitical trade issues. And so what we've seen is a significant increase in terms of people using risk management products. This year, for the first time, we exceeded 2 million contracts of open interest in our corn contract and 10 million contracts across all of our agricultural products. And, you know, these are open interest, or people putting positions on and holding those positions to manage their risk.
So are we seeing it beyond the crops like dairy? Are we seeing activity there too?
Yeah, we're seeing growth across the board, although things like dairy aren't as, you know, some of the time they're not as directly impacted. If you think about dairy producers in the U.S., the pricing mechanism is very tied domestically to some of the government programs. I can't begin to tell you how it all works. Dairy is a bit of a maze to me, but it definitely, in terms of particularly the global products, global benchmarks like corn, soybeans, and wheat, you know, we're seeing a significant uptick. We had one really interesting thing happen. A lot of this trade dispute started to break, we had a record day. And what was unique about that record day is before the markets here opened, so during our overnight period, we'd already traded almost 900,000 contracts. So what that's telling you is it's not just the U.S. that's using our product. Our products are being used globally as risk management tools.
When I came to Chicago in 1960, the Merck was the butter and egg market. But you have gone so much international. Are you trading in every country of the world that's in agricultural production?
Well, I don't know if we're in every country, but I would be surprised if you would find any country with major agricultural production and that has a reasonably developed marketing system where our products aren't being used one way or another, either as a benchmark for price discovery or a hedging tool, or even in many cases where you have a country where the market participants that are buying from producers there are then in turn hedging on our marketplace.
And recently you made news with the acquisition of a new trading platform in London?
So you're referring to the Next acquisition. And so Next is a global firm that is much more in the cash markets. They are predominantly in fixed income and FX, and so initially there isn't going to be much impact on agriculture, but we see that as a very significant improvement or opportunity for us to grow in the interest rate and FX markets.
And are you looking at new agricultural products at CME Group?
Well, Orion, we're always talking to our customers about what are the right products, and twofold. Number one, the products we have today, what do we need to do to change them to make them more effective hedging tools? And over the last couple of years, you've seen us do a lot of that in grain products as well as in the livestock products. But then we're always talking to customers about, you know, where do they have risk and how can CME deliver products to do that? Great example is, you know, as we look at agriculture, we see some very growing regions, the Black Sea being one of them. And so we launched both a Black Sea corn and a Black Sea wheat contract, which are, they're not trading even a fraction of our existing wheat and corn contracts, but for participants in those markets, they're becoming an effective hedging tool.
And then there is the story of options. I can remember getting calls from farm listeners saying, what's this options thing? But it's certainly grown, hasn't it?
Options are a tremendous example of a tool that provides a hedger with flexibility. You know, traditional hedging, when you're hedging with futures, you're locking in a price. And if the market goes up or the market goes down, you've locked in that price. And that's a good thing because you want that certainty. What options let you do is lock in either a floor price or a ceiling price. Now, you're going to pay a premium to do that, but it gives you more flexibility. So as a marketer, when you're in a market where you don't have certainty of where you think the market's going to go, options are an effective tool. And, you know, we launched those back in 1984. Since then, we have expanded that portfolio significantly with, you know, things that are options that are a week long. So it's event risk. Hey, we have a WASDE report coming out. I want some short-term protection. We've launched options on spreads. We've launched cereal options. We've launched short-dated new crop options, which are a series of options on the new crop contract on like the December corn or the November soybeans, where the time the option covers is less, so therefore the cost to the producer is less.
Always interesting to talk to you, my friend. I learn a great deal, Tim Andreessen of the CME Group, Chicago. Well, thank you very much. I'm curious to know how Dave Ennard is going to make all of his activity today from Northwestern basketball here to Northwestern football in Indianapolis. Going to be fun to watch him. He's got to be moving fast today, but He'll do a great job, and you'll hear it all here on WGN Radio, where we start the second half of the Saturday morning show with Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wing Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I am Orion, and this morning I'll be talking about managing America's forests. During the final negotiations to put a farm bill together, one of the sticking points turned out to be the U.S. Forest Service and how we should or should not manage America's forests. That certainly has come into play with the devastating wildfires in California. And while I talk a lot about annual crops like wheat and corn and soybeans and hay and other crops that we really produce in a year, timber is a crop product. But instead of a year to produce, it'll take 20 or 30 years to produce the timber and the lumber that we need. And that takes management. But there are members of Congress and there are environmental groups who say, we ought not touch the forests. Let them do what they do. And when that happens, we don't go in and trim the underbrush that provides the fuel for fast burning and fast spreading forest fires. And we've seen the devastation that that lack of management and lack of crop activity in the nation's forests has caused recently, with loss of buildings and with loss of life. But yet, in the final debate on the farm bill, the U.S. Forest Service did come into the issue with environmentalists who did not want the U.S. Forest Service to go in and trim that underbrush and manage some of the areas where that underbrush is the fuel for fast-spreading fires. I don't understand why the environmental groups don't want us to touch the forest, because they need that kind of management to avoid the devastation and the loss of life that we've seen this year in fast-spreading wildfires in California. Let the Forest Service do what it needs to do to enhance the growth of the forest, but also to prevent the devastation and destruction caused by forest wildfires. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks, and we're at 19 minutes before 6 o'clock on the Saturday morning show. We're going to talk markets this morning as Max Armstrong sits down with Brian Basting to talk about market activity in what is a fast-moving pace at the moment on the Farm Bill, on NAFTA number 2, and on the meeting in Buenos Aires. So Max will be chatting with Brian when we continue here on the Saturday morning show.
Brian Basting joins us this weekend to talk about some of the factors behind the markets and some of the things that that he's watching. Obviously, trade is first and foremost at the top of the list, and what happens in our trade relationships around the world. And then we're still watching weather. First of all, it's rather remarkable when you drive down the road how much crop you see in the field yet in some places. Ohio, Michigan, northern Illinois, North Dakota, North Carolina. There's still crop standing in the field.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Max. I think we want to recognize those areas as still areas that need to finish this 18 harvest. As you mentioned, North Dakota, we work with some customers up there. Got some corn they're working on up there. Michigan is another area that's still got some corn and beans to work on. And some other areas you highlighted too, Ohio, Indiana, and of course North Carolina with the soybean crops. So yeah, this 18 harvest is not wrapped up quite yet.
As of a week ago, I think there was still about 20% of the corn in the field in North Dakota. Now, Michigan, Ohio, quite often by this late date, you'll still see standing crop out there. But that's a little bit of an uneasy feeling, isn't it? Especially as roads have gotten muddy, fields have gotten muddy, snow is out there. The crop doesn't look good in snow, does it?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head, too. We've had some weather issues with an early snowfall here in the Midwest. And when you total up the acreage, when you look at the USDA harvest progress on corn and beans, it's roughly 5 million acres of corn and a little over 5 million acres of beans yet to be harvested as of Sunday. So I think anytime you're talking about those volumes of bushels still in the field, it's something to be aware of.
Well, the farmer, of course, worries about it as an individual, worries about that crop that he or she has out there. It generally isn't all that significant in the whole scheme of things, is it, at the end of the day?
Probably more localized in terms of some regional impact, but you're right. We still, that means we got 95% of the crop harvested, which is obviously those folks are fortunate to have that crop in the bin and tucked away, feel really good about that. But in terms of a market mover in the big picture, no, I think you're correct. It's more of a local thing that's very important to those folks, but nationwide, not so much.
A buddy asked me the other day, he said, well, are those producers just storing it out there over the course of the winter, storing it on the plants? I said, well, that's a risky proposition. We do have, it did remind me, we do have some unconventional storage going now.
It's happened before, Max. Certainly not something that most producers would want to think about, of course, over the winter. But they've gone through it before, corn especially these days. It's a stout crop and could weather that. But hopefully we get these crops finished before the end of December.
But what he prompted me to think about was that crop that's stored out there in bags, for example, now. And you notice that as you're going down the countryside or flying over it at a low altitude.
A big deal this year, Max. Something that's unprecedented in terms of the volume of bushels that's being stored in those bags. It's something that the producers and elevators have gotten more comfortable with this year.
Aside from our trade of soybeans with China, how is trade? I mean, how are we doing with the other Asian nations, other customers that buy from us routinely?
You know, look at the soybean market, Max. When you have Brazil basically now exclusively providing beans to China, our shipments to other destinations are quite strong. The problem with beans is that China is such a large buyer that's really impacted the market, of course. But with the removal of Brazil competition to these other areas, whether it be Mexico or Japan, whoever it may be, or other Asia, that's great news in terms of getting that market built. But again, without China, then the exports overall suffered.
This is a limited window of opportunity, too, is it not, ahead of the arrival of the 2019 South American crop into the marketplace?
It certainly is. A record fast planting progress of beans in Brazil, a record fast development progress in beans in Brazil. Our consultant is saying we could see harvest in the early areas of Brazil as early as before Christmas.
Before Christmas.
Some of those beans, after the local crushers have got their fill, could be moving into the export market as early as mid-January.
Wow. There are no weather problems down there at the moment, are there?
No. The only thing is a little bit of wet weather moving in here, but some of those beans, Max, as your listeners know, are in the pod set and pod fill. Wet weather is good for beans, as we all know here, when in that July-August time period.
Let me ask you about ethanol, and it's been on my mind here of late as I pull up to the pump and fill up with E85. I use it faithfully. I like the fuel. My particular pickup truck handles it very well. I like supporting the American corn grower. I fill up in that Silverado every time with E85, and I've loved watching the price come down. How is the demand for ethanol?
Well, we look at the ethanol from the big picture, Max. I think the ethanol margins are struggling right now for a combination of factors, whether it be input costs, natural gas, of course, spiked here, a lot of variables in play. But regardless, the margins for ethanol plants are struggling right now, and we're seeing that finally translate into reduced utilization in some of these plants, and even a handful of plants shutting down operations, albeit maybe temporarily, maybe permanently, but we'll see.
Have the exports fallen back a little bit? Is that part of the pressure? Do you know?
I haven't tracked the ethanol exports, to be honest, Max.
Because earlier this year, I know they were doing pretty well.
Yeah, they had been doing well, but it's not something that I track really closely. Something that obviously is another factor to watch.
Feed demand, of course, becomes a factor, too, that you watch closely. And we'll get a new reading by the end of December on what's happening in the nation's hog herd with the new quarterly hogs and pigs report. But that thing with the swine fever in China has a lot of folks saying it has explosive capabilities there. In other words, if it continues to spread and they continue to cull the herd in China, tens of thousands of hogs, it has ramifications in maybe more than one way around the world.
One variable that might temper that a little bit, Max, as your listeners know, we got a big surprise in the WASD report here early in November when they revised the Chinese stocks of corn and wheat dramatically higher in the case of corn. So whether those stocks are very old or not, that's another issue. Whether they're usable or not is another issue. But certainly, yeah, if China is looking at contracting their herds, that's going to contract the demand for soybeans and soybean meal moving forward potentially. It's something we don't want to ignore because the volume of hogs and the volume of meal that's consumed in China is tremendous.
Longer term, if that pork herd contracts in China, in what is the biggest pork-consuming nation of the world, and where some people believe that that is such a strategic commodity, strategic food that the people will demand, one would think that our demand for pork from the United States would be ratcheted up, that producers would continue to expand production as they already have here, and that would help domestic demand for grains.
Yes, we've seen that. As a matter of fact, in the hog futures recently, we've seen a spike associated probably large part with some speculative thoughts on that impact. We have seen those deferred 19 hog futures contracts spike, so yes, that would be a potential export market for U.S. pork and potential demand, more demand for U.S. corn domestically to feed our hogs.
Looming reports coming up. Obviously, we don't get the final production figures on this year for corn and soybeans until the month of January. What about December? Is there anything you're looking for? And, of course, we get spring wheat plantings reports, I believe, do we not, in January?
Yeah, there'll be a big day January. I believe it's January 11th, Max. The Friday the 11th will be a very big day. Quarterly stocks report, supply-demand report, and final production, and winter wheat seeding. So, but for December, I think the biggest thing the market will be watching will be South American updates. What are the size of these? Will the USDA tweak? Some of these South American production numbers are already edging higher for Brazil. USDA is at 120.5. Some people are saying it could be closer to 123, 125 for Brazilian soybean production. It might be a bit premature for USDA to be that aggressive, but that'd be something to watch.
You talk to a lot of farmers on a daily basis, I know, and then when you're out visiting at meetings. What's the sentiment? What's the attitude that you pick up on right now with trade being such a big deal, prices being so low, bankers watching so closely?
I don't want to overgeneralize, Max, but I think 2018, when everything is wrapped up, if producers are smart about their marketing, could be a solid year. It may not be a great year, but it's not going to be a very disastrous year for a couple reasons. Number one, the yields in many cases, again, not universally, but many cases, the yields were well above what producers are expecting. Number two, in the case of soybeans, the MFP payment. And so when you add up the bushels times the yield, you know, again, looking at the opportunity for a solid year, the concern that I'm hearing over and over again now is 19. When you look at the December 19 corn, November 19 beans, the possibility of not getting an MFP payment in 2019, a lot of moving pieces there. We don't know, of course, any idea what yields might be, but right now, the 19 prospects are on producers' minds, front and center.
With the struggles of this year, there'll be a lot of people are pleased to be able to close the books and turn the calendar from 2018 to 2019. Let's hope and pray that the year ahead is a better one than this one. Hope it is for you too, Brian. Good to see you.
Always good to visit with you, Max.
Brian Basting from Advanced Trading, Bloomington, Illinois.
Well, finally, it looks like some things are falling into place after a lot of waiting this year. Apparently, the Democrats and the Republicans on Capitol Hill have hammered out the new farm bill, and it will now be going to the president's desk for his signature before the end of the year. And that means we'll have a farm bill in place for the next 5 years. The other item that's falling into place is the replacement for NAFTA. U.S., Canada, Mexico have signed a trade deal. Still some language that has to be ironed out. The three countries still bickering over the finer points of the deal just hours before officials were due to sit down and sign it as at the G20 summit meeting in Buenos Aires. And it was kind of interesting that Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau still had a few barbs of his own. He called the deal by its old name, NAFTA, and he prodded President Trump over U.S. steel and aluminum tariffs. But at least we're getting two major issues dealing with agriculture into place for, well, we hope, 5 years on the farm bill, and we hope even longer on the U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement. And, of course, we're underway with the State Farm Bureau conventions, the convention at the Michigan at Grand Rapids ended yesterday. But up at Wisconsin Dells, starting yesterday, the annual state convention of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau, and that will go over the weekend and into early next week. And then, of course, we'll do the Iowa-Illinois State Farm Bureau conventions as well. A lot of activity and a lot of questions still to be answered in Buenos Aires. What will come out of that dinner meeting tonight with the President of the U.S. and the President of China? That has held the attention of traders in the stock market and the agricultural market all week long. So we hope we get some good news from that meeting as well. And our thanks to you, as always, for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Our thanks to Bob Ferguson for doing the engineering and doing it the right way every week. And again, thanks to you for joining Max Armstrong and me, Orion Samuelson, here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.